Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 287. 287, I said.
You got it.
What
the
fuck? I mean 287, not 280 Steppenwolf. Episode 5 of the Daily Zeitgeist. It's a production of iHeartRadio. It still is that, okay? And it's still a fucking podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness. And you're hearing my voice, so you know what time it is. The substitute teacher is in the fucking building, and he is high as shit. He just got out his Mitsubishi, and the smoke clouds are billowing out. It's Friday, May 19th. It's Friday! I fucking love Fridays. Fuck yeah. May 19th, and guess what? It's NASCAR Day. Didn't know that that was a thing. It's National Pizza Party Day. It's Malcolm X Day. It's National Devil's Food Cake Day. It's National Defense Transport. No, we're not talking about that. National Endangered Species Day. National Bike to Work Day, and many other things. It's a fantastic day, but really, it's Friday. Yeah. My name is Miles Gray. I'm your lovely host, a.k.a. I'm sorry, Miss Feinstein. Ooh, I am for real. Shouldn't have to work until you die. It's time to give term limits a try. Okay, shout out to at Right to Post. Doing good right now at Right to Post with these AKAs. I'm feeling them with the hip hop bend that only an elder millennial like me will appreciate. But yes, thank you for that one. Obviously, that was to the tune of Miss Jackson by Outkast. Fantastic album. And I'm thrilled to be joined. My co-host today, my guest co-host today. Look, this brother's from Chicago. You know what I mean? He's a great musician. He's got great taste. He's got a brand new tattoo that is fantastic, and it's not even finished yet. And you know, I know this is a podcast, so it doesn't help to talk about tattoos, but I will. And look, DJ, producer, I don't know what else to say. All around fantastic human. Please welcome to the microphone, Justin Connor!
Woo, man, it's your boy, Justin Connor, straight out of Chicago, the perpetual shy guy on a 12-year siesta in Los Angeles.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm out
with the
here.
Artist arms, have, like we were talking yesterday.
I got the artist arms, the little noodle arms. You know but, I mean? You know, I'm trying to decorate them up with some art right here.
It's
my arm is a little raw right now, but man, amazing, fantastic artist I linked up with. Danny Cancino. I'm going to drop more of her information at the end of the show and plug her because, man, I couldn't be happier and I only have like 20% of the tattoo done. So.
I love that 20% and you're like, and I recommend it.
Yeah,
and then
absolutely.
Cut to later, you're like, man, it was an L, man.
Oh, no,
the
no.
Other 80% was so fucked up. No, I'm joking.
No.
But anyway, you doing good, Justin?
Yeah, I'm doing great, man. Fantastic, you know.
Shoe game looking strong as ever in the background, you know.
Hey, man. This is thousands of dollars worth of mistakes.
What are those?
Here.
What are those? Are those threes down low? What are those?
Yeah, those are the Amamanieres. Those are the Amamanieres.
Oh, yeah, those are good for all my sneakerheads out there. We love those. We love those. But first, we got to introduce our guests today. We've got fantastic writers, comedians, performers, scientific explorers, if you will. They got a show on HBO Max that pretty in line with all of my interests because it's called High Science and I like science, but I also love high. I love high. You know, I think people know that on this show. I love high. I love to get high. You know, it's one of the greatest things ever. And combining that with science makes it a fantastic show, which is very accessible for people like me who have an ADD-addled brain. Please welcome to the microphone / stage, Mr. Matt Kleinman and Zach Poitras.
Hello.
Nice, dude.
Good to see you.
Oh, nice to be here, dude.
Yeah, thanks for having us, guys.
Yeah, yeah. I got to say, the show is fucking great, man. I love, like I said, I like science, but I like high. And you have a show where Paul Bettany voices a sentient bong that helps teach you about complex scientific concepts. That's pretty much everything I need in my life. I was telling you guys off mic, I fuck with anything Paul Bettany does, mostly because he's an Arsenal fan like me. And so that's really what it's about. I have no idea about his artistic acumen, but just because we fuck with the same team, I love him. But yeah, welcome to the show. Like, how are things with the both of you?
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for digging the show. Yeah, I mean, we made it for people like you.
Truly.
People who just wanted to, like, get high and, like, put something on. Like, the ideal person watching a show is, like, you come back home from a party or something, but you want to, like, you're going to, like, eat. You got, like Jack-in-the-Box tacos on the way home or something, and you want to smoke a little bit more and put something on while you eat them.
Yeah.
That is what we made the show for, that exact
That's
moment.
The best thing that I can recommend for anyone is something that has a low level of entry, but then you get fascinated with. That is all I needed was one sentence to jump in head first.
Oh, yeah. Look, it's this easy. Sentient bong teaches people lessons about science. What? That's
amazing.
He's our spirit guide, you know? He guides us through our, so we get high on what we're going to learn that day. So it's like, we get high on Neanderthals, we get high on trees, and then the rest of the episode is our hallucinogenic journey, learning about these topics from, you know, scientists who are at the top of their game out there. We're also, you know, hallucinating interviews with them. And the whole way Dr. O, Paul Bettany, is guiding us with his robot bong geniusness.
And it's fantastic. What's, you know, how, like, are y'all actual stoners? Or are you just really clever creators? I gotta ask.
Yeah.
I mean, yes.
Oh, okay, cool. Just making, I love, yes. Part of me is like, they don't seem high during the film.
You had the skeptical look in your eye, Miles.
You got to know.
We had to be super sober for the shooting of it because we were like, we had to shoot the whole thing in like 2 days, and it was like teleprompters and pressure.
Oh, you
and
shot
it's like,
that
oh
whole season in two
Whoa.
Days?
Yes, dude. You guys would not, like, this show is like the lowest budget, like, scrappy thing. Like, it's a miracle that it got made. The whole thing is like handcrafted, and we like tried to make it, you know, and it's amazing. It's on HBO Max, but like truly, we shot the whole thing in 2 days in front of a green screen.
Wow. That's
the whole high part. And then we had one half day in the lab, which is where it bookends the whole experience.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. This sounds like my little high self in the mid 2000s watching Adult Swim when it was in its heyday. Like, it really feels like you captured the heart of like my, what I wanted at that time.
Yeah.
Amazing.
If you fuck, if you fuck with Adult Swim, if you fuck with Aqua Teen, if you fuck with science, like all that, it's all very rhetorically related. That's why I really dig the show.
Yeah, because it seems like the same people who love Adult Swim shit also like to put on Planet Earth. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I feel like those things are definitely like, those people are curious about shit in different ways, but also align.
I brought up Planet Earth in yesterday's episode. That's how much Planet Earth, it just rings through my skull, because when that DVD set came out, that 2005?
In the globe?
Oh, yeah. Getting high as shit. And again, I'll keep saying it, my favorite episode, Caves, because that intro, when the guy jumps into the fucking
just
pit.
Just jumps
and
in and just disappears into darkness.
And I'll have to say it every time. I just want to feel that. I don't know why. I want to jump into a void and vanish. I don't know if that's dangerous or says something about like my, you know, outlook on the earth, but hey, that's my fantasy at the moment.
I would love to be in a cave and then all of a sudden watch it come to life with like bioluminescence.
Yeah.
You know, like all these like little creatures who never see the light of day, but they can glow in the dark. And for some reason, I can see them very clearly and easily. I would love that.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Well, Matt, Zach, we're going to get to know you a little bit better. But first, let's clue people in on what we're going to talk about. Some serious shit first. The debt ceiling shit show continues. There is this fucking stupid ass pantomime between the Democrats and the Republicans about like, oh man, it's gonna fuck up the economy, but we're gonna do a deal. It's gonna be catastrophic. Don't worry, we're not gonna default. But if we do, oh shit. It's like, it's exhausting.
And really all it is like, it's all just a fucking performative act just to cut social spending, because this is what happens every single fucking time. So we'll touch in on that, because it is talked about a lot in the news, but not in this way that needs to cast a little more, you know, cynicism on the process. And since we're with some creators, some people who have made some shows, I think it's good to talk about just sort of what the writerless sort of slates look like for people's entertainment coming up. Because with the writer's strike, guess what? Y'all not getting anything new. So what are the networks doing? They're scraping the bottom of the fucking barrel. And we'll talk about some of those shows, as well as like Jimmy Fallon, like, flexing. He was stunting on people about the new Zelda game. We'll talk about that too, because it all fits in with the strike. And then we'll wrap it out, because the new Fast and Furious movie is coming out. We gotta ask, is this going to cause more people to drive like they are out their fucking minds? Are more Dom Toretto wannabes going to hit the road? Because apparently there's some statistics that seem to suggest that this movie is inspiring some idiotic behavior behind the wheel. But hey, we'll talk about that and plenty more. But first, who do we start with, Matt or Zach? I'm going to ask you, what's something from your search history that reveals a little bit about who you are or what you're into?
Yeah, Zach, you go, man. You got the
yeah. Round. So I've kind of taken over both of our search histories, because my search history is all poison ivy treatment based searches. A week and a half ago, I was shooting a short film in Cape Cod, and we were doing a nighttime shot, and I needed to. I'm not going to say exactly what the whole film's about, but I needed to get a giant spoon that was like Technicolor lighting up to lift off this mound at this cranberry bog in Cape Cod. And so I was laying on this mound, and it was nighttime, and I was actually just scared of ticks, right? I was like, there's tons of ticks around here.
Yeah.
So I laid down a jacket, and I was like, this is all good. And then I was down there for like an hour and a half trying to get the shot to work, and I'm just laying on the ground. I'm like, you know what? I keep checking. I'm not seeing any ticks. This is awesome, man. I've avoided all the ticks. And then 2 days later, I start to get these little bumps on my arms, and I'm like, wait, what is going on? Like, and then I was like, did I get a mosquito bite? And then I realized that mound that I was laying in, I had realized this before, like a month ago, I had tracked it in my brain. I was like, don't forget, that mound is covered in poison ivy. And I realized, oh no, I've covered my arms and my neck and my in poison ivy. Jesus. And over the plane ride back to the West Coast, I just started to like scratch more, and like I started to feel it. And then over the course of the week, I just like funk. I just got a rash and blisters all over my body. And it's been an insane experience, but I'm finally getting better. And I sent photos to Matt to tell him about it, and he reacted with horror, and he also started looking at poison ivy.
Well, here's what I didn't know. I assumed like, oh, poison ivy, like that'll wreck your day or a couple of days. Poison ivy lasts 2 to 3 weeks.
Oh, fuck. Really?
Yeah.
Is there a difference between poison ivy and poison oak? Like, is one better?
No, they release the same erysitol. Erysitol. I can't remember how to pronounce it, but they're
it's fine. It's you the do same a show oil. About high science. No one's going to.
The same oil that is released by all these different plants, right. And it does the same thing.
And and interacting with that can be a 2 to 3 week fuck fest, basically, for your skin.
Because it also, it makes it so that you can, when you just brush against it, you spread the oil down your arms, around your skin, it gets all
genius.
Over. So I ended up getting it, like, all over places that weren't even exposed.
Yeah.
I'm from Illinois. Like, we moved to this little town. After a while, there was it was covered with poison ivy when you wanted to go camping or fishing, which is new to me. I was like, okay, yeah, I love the outdoors now. I used to be surrounded by concrete and pavement and whatnot. And no one told me about poison oak, poison ivy. They literally, weirdly enough, they told me to watch out for Lyme disease and ticks. Like, that was the biggest thing.
And
horse flies. Yeah. And we were just kids. We were rolling up and down a hill like for hours and hours and hours. Same exact thing happened to me, but I got it all in like my inner thigh, and I could not resist scratching, and I spread that shit everywhere. It was painful. I
spread that shit.
Yeah, it was like one of the most painful experiences I've ever went through. And shortly before that, I had a fishing hook go through my finger and come out the other side. I would say poison ivy was slightly, because it lasted so long. But yeah. I went back to fishing that afternoon after the fish hook thing. The poison ivy took me out. I didn't go outside for like a month.
I know. I was running the other day. I was like, hey, man, there's this new hill I want to roll down, man. You want to come check it out with me? You're like, no, never. I was like, okay, shit. Made me feel like a child.
Yeah, you got to scope out the hills before you roll down them.
Yeah,
that's sure, fucked man. Up, man. Yeah, please be careful out there with the poison ivies and oaks.
And,
Matt, you were saying you were also searching because you, just in solidarity, you're like, I got to
I just wanted to know how long my friend was going to be.
I literally would stop. I would be like talking to Matt and be like, dude, I got to go. I got to take a cold shower or something, man. Yeah.
I was so amped up and I was talking to him. I was like, what is going on? But now
I just couldn't stand still. Yeah.
Picturing you on a flight as you're like realizing it's getting worse. I feel bad for the other passengers too, who might be like, is this guy?
Yeah,
okay.
It was definitely like, just keep it cool. Just keep it cool,
like,
man.
Yeah, like, because you're probably like, don't start scratching. You're just like,
whew. Yeah.
Yeah.
Obligatory, sorry, this is on a podcast, but this is the photo Zach sent me.
Oh, man.
Oh, no.
That's rough.
Oof. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I don't wish.
Listeners, just imagine like red splotches all over a man's.
Oh, man, it looks so bad. I would wish that on Mitch McConnell. what's something y'all think is overrated?
Oh, okay. I got this one. I don't know. Maybe your audience is like cinephiles and I'm fucking myself and everyone's going to. But I Sight and Sound poll, top movie. I finally watched In the Mood for Love. Are you guys familiar with this movie? In the Mood for Love?
No.
It's considered one of the greatest films of all time. Like, it topped the like Sight and Sound like auteur, you know, list in 2012, I think. Like, it's always in the mix. Like, Letterboxd people are always talking about In the Mood for Love is like, actually, this is the greatest film.
Oh, this is the Wong Kar-wai film.
Wong Kar-wai in Hong Kong. And this movie is horribly overrated. It's like, the thing is, it is beautiful. And there's like the hallway thing with the music. Like, if you've seen it or know it, like, that is great. But the whole movie is just about two people who should fuck and then they don't fuck. And that's the whole thing. Like, and you're just like, oh, these guys should fuck.
You're like,
and
this like, is overly romanticized.
It's crazy. It's like these two people whose partners cheat on them with each other and then they fall in love. And then it's like, okay, yeah, so you guys can do it too. You should fuck. But they don't.
Man, it's so interesting you bring this up, Matt, because I live with my sister. She's, you know, the audience is familiar with her, Joelle Monique, amazing film critic. So it's kind of hard to have an argument with her about this stuff. So generally, I come from a place of curiosity. I'm like, why is this or why does this happen? She was watching some melodramatic thing the other day and I had the same thing. I was like, this was an 8-minute conversation about whether they love each other or not. And I'm like already 4 steps ahead. I'm like, just get to it. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
And
yeah. We know where this
like,
is going.
Yeah. And she was like, you're missing the point of melodrama. It's like almost kissing is like the hottest thing, you know, not like not quite getting there. And sure. I was like, all right, you know, it's not for me, but like, I'm trying to appreciate the art form a little more.
The slow burn.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Of will they want.
Yeah, but then you got to get to the burn. You got to get to the fire. Yeah, you got to get to it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. And it's just like, why didn't you fuck? Like, you could have fucked. They could have fucked a bunch of times and then they don't. Well, and it's not really. Like, it just doesn't. I didn't believe the reason why they didn't fuck. Because people fuck. That's the thing. The thing I know about people is that when they want to fuck, they fuck.
It's okay to spoil this for me. What was the reason for not fucking?
There's no reason.
That's melodrama. That's infuriating.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I get it. Because like for those people, it's like emotional edging. You know, on camera. And you're like, some of us are Neanderthals. You know, we're Cro-Magnon man, where we're like, just do the bang or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
yeah, Neanderthals, though, they never actually kissed. They would withhold. They were really good at it.
Yeah.
That was their thing. No,
they invented edging.
Tantric. Yeah.
Yeah. They invented edging as the first form of birth control. People don't know that. People really.
That's why they died off. They didn't procreate because they just thought they were just so big on edging. It was huge. Yeah.
Makes sense. That's science.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. All right. Well, cool. I'm glad to know, like, sometimes like there are those films and I like movies, but not to the point where like I can connect with sort of those kinds of films. And that's just me as a consumer. I'm more of a mouth agape airplane guy who views shit like that. Sometimes,
yeah, no, I love pretentious movies. I loved Beau Is Afraid, for example, that just came out, was divisive, incredible film. Like, I like that kind of thing. This one. My wife was asleep like halfway in and I was like, all right,
yeah, fuck this. I felt there was a time too, like in like the early aughts where like all my friends who are like, you know, big cinephiles, like Wong Kar-wai was just like, just beyond reproach. Like there's like, they're like, don't fuck. No, man, this motherfucker's a genius.
No, dude, he's not, dude. Reproach.
Reproach him. Everything is good. And yeah, I mean, you know, 2046. I fucked with that. You know, I wasn't mad at that.
Was that good?
I mean, I remember at the time, I think I may have just said it because I was dating somebody who was like, you need to see this film. And I'm like, yeah, I fuck with that. I have a bad habit of like being like, yeah, what do you like? Okay, I'll try that out, even though I don't. Shout out Harry Potter films. Could only get through one. Okay, now what is something y'all think is underrated?
Ooh. Zach, you got a good one?
I mean, I've just got Ivy on the brain, and I just want to say cold showers. I've also been a huge fan of cold showers recently. It's been growing. I think cold showers are absolutely incredible. Wake you up more, and they kind of like, I think they make you a better person. I think the longer that you can stay, I do. I truly
this is
some, do.
This
I think
Jordan, Zach, you're saying that people who don't take cold showers are bad people?
No.
They're going
I'm
to hell.
I'm not saying you're all lower. I'm saying we're all on this, and we can optimize ourselves
got
with cold
it.
Showers.
Oh,
this, if you start.
Yeah.
You start with a hot shower, and then you just slowly, towards the end of your shower, just start making it colder and colder and colder, and then you get it to it's really cold, and you just withstand that for a couple minutes, and just like end it that way.
So
I
you
think
do
that
a,
you'll like you'll feel way better getting out of the shower.
You do it like a you do a you do a reverse frog boil, basically.
I do. Yeah, that's exactly.
Start
I do
hot.
A reverse frog boil. And then I get it super cold. And then by the end, like, not only do I feel better, but, you know, my mirror is less foggy. Like, I can already see myself a little easier. You know, everything just kind of goes a little smoother when you do that.
I mean, this is an experience shared by many people. If you had a fucked up water heater where that shit might just naturally happen during your shower. You're like, oh, shit, it's gone?
Maybe that's how it started for me, where I was missing that. Yeah, I've had Brooklyn apartments that had some really shitty water situations, and it was like, I'm good with cold showers because I had to be, but now it's like, yeah, you know what,
yeah,
I love it.
I love that. Okay, cool. Yeah, I mean, I as much as I've tried it before, because I remember I've heard the same thing from like biohacker type people that I had interviewed in the past. I just can't. I fucking hate, like, when my gasp reflex kicks in, it's over. I'm like, no, I don't fuck with
that. You got to just get past that gasp. That's the thing you get past.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
you're in a whole new world.
Yeah. I'm a hedonist, bro. I love being comfortable at all costs.
Yeah, yeah.
And so when, like, I have a little space heater right here, like next to the shower. I'll get out of the shower and like turn that space heater on and just stand in front.
Oh wow!
Like while I'm toweling myself off, like it's incredibly wasteful. You don't got the
towel heater either.
No, I don't have a towel.
Okay,
I really, what you changed the game mentioning the terry cloth
robe.
Haven't gotten one of those yet.
Oh, Justin,
yeah,
you gotta
I know.
Get the robe.
I've been lacking. It's
robes.
That's the next step.
Because when again, like if you don't like being cold, just the fucking robe is a whole body towel, so you don't have to feel all that water evaporating on your skin and cooling off. And shit.
I'm already making the DIY version. I put like four towels around me.
Oh, there you go.
Just like, it's not economical.
What is a robe if not 3.5 to 4 towels?
You're right.
Exactly.
You're right.
Without the stitching, basically.
Without the sewing machine. Exactly.
Exactly.
Matt Kleinman, what about you? You got anything you think is underrated?
Oh, yeah. You know, so I really like spicy foods and hot sauces.
Oh, yeah.
And I've been talking to people, and like, even people who aren't into that sort of stuff, I do feel like people don't know enough about Crystal hot sauce.
What?
Oh. You guys know Crystal?
Oh, yes. Oh, you're talking about white people, Matt.
Yeah, that's all the rage.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to come at you like that, but I'm like,
please come at me. No, but that's great to hear.
Crystal.
I'm really glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Well, but I would say even in comparison to Louisiana and like Texas Pete, is Crystal held above them?
I don't like Texas Pete's. No, I'm not.
I have more experience.
Definitely the lowest,
I have more experience in like the Georgia area, Georgia, Alabama area, and like Crystal's is huge.
Okay.
There. Yeah.
No.
Well,
I feel like Crystal's the chain. You mean Crystal Hot Sauce?
Yeah, the
Crystal
Hot Sauce.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you meant Crystal's the because there's also the franchise. Crystal's.
Yes, the chain. Yes.
Yes. Right. I'm sorry.
Also, Crystal's the Rock are great.
Oh,
I love rocks.
Shout out to Shungite. Yeah, of course. We love Crystal's. We're all about Crystal here.
But I feel like people don't know, like, you know, I don't know. I think it's a good gateway hot sauce is kind of the thing that I've been like telling people who are like getting into hot sauces or want to or are like afraid of them. And like, I think Cholula had been the gateway hot sauce for a lot of people for a while because a lot of people thought Tabasco was too spicy. Mm-hmm. But I actually think Crystal is a better gateway hot sauce for people. And I think, and a lot of this is also just because like, if you know, going over to someone's house or going and they just have nothing, it's like if at least you have Crystal, then we're like, okay,
yeah,
it works with
cheap.
Almost anything.
Cheap
yeah.
shit.
Yeah.
They have
yes,
it at every
exactly.
fucking, they have every grocery store. But I think most people are like, I want Tabasco, and now Tabasco is in like 9,000 flavors. I'm like, come on now.
Yes, totally.
Easy.
And Tabasco's great, and I like Tabasco, but I think I don't know. I want it to be more ubiquitous. It should be more like the South everywhere, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
that's 100%. Yeah.
What about Sriracha? Has that fallen off?
Yeah, Sriracha had its heyday like in the tens, the teens. Mm-hmm. I remember, yeah. Shout out my boy, it Randy, did. Wrote a fucking cookbook.
I think we all overused it. I think Sriracha's fine. You're right. It was just everywhere.
Blew it out.
Every meal. And then like we all just got used to a Sriracha taste for mm-hmm. all of our cheap meals that we were eating.
Yeah.
And then it was like, I can't do
that. I still use it just in the context, right? Like, yeah, totally. I love to make hot. Yeah. I love grilling. I love mm-hmm. I love making wings, especially.
I use it in everyday conversation. Shout out to Chicago Bulls fans. If you're a fan of Stacey King, give me the hot sauce, Sriracha. That's his catchphrase. I love that shit. But yeah, other than that, yeah, I think it really, 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 really fell off. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say I prefer their garlic paste, the garlic
one.
About the one with like the green, like the little
jar.
Squatty bottle with the green top. Mm-hmm. The garlic paste one, I think, is a little bit better
flavor wise.
Then it's less sweet. It's a little bit more like everything you like and not maybe what you don't.
This is my mm-hmm. easy hack for wings. You take a fucking, you know, buy your party wings or whatever, whole wings, whatever, however you like to get down, and marinate them in a just. What I do is put them in a Ziploc bag, empty a whole bottle of Crystal in it, and you let that sit for a few hours. It like it's not going to get too spicy, but it gives it such a great flavor. It's like my very easy way to have like good wings that aren't too sort of intensive in terms of the preparation. So,
well, I think the hack for doing like Nashville chicken, you know, that sort of thing is marinating the chicken in hot sauce before you bread it.
Oh, yeah. I bet. Yeah. And that like old fucking oil chili concoction that they'll pour over after. You're like, sure. Yeah. More of that. More of that. All right, we're going to take a quick break and do some light hot sauce tastings, and then we'll be right back to talk about the dead ceiling right after this.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. And just to talk about some serious business really quick, the debt ceiling shit, sorry, that's how Australians would call it, it continues. Right now in the news, we keep hearing about the looming debt ceiling crisis, that America could default on its debt and worsen our image to the rest of the world, especially our trading partners, because they're like, oh, y'all don't pay your fucking bills? This would be terrible for the U.S. economy, and the Republicans know that. The super whack jobs in the GOP are practically salivating for a manufactured financial crisis to better the party's overall chances in 2024, just so they can move on from, we don't believe in human rights or abortion access, and just start saying things like, Joe Brandon killed the economy. That's why you should vote for me, a Nazi. And Biden and the Democrats have said that the default will be a disaster. Same thing for the GOP. Defaulting would be terrible. But then Joe Brandon, McCarthy, Mitch McConnell, they are all also saying some form of, oh, we're definitely not going to default. There's no way we're going to default on the debt. No, we're going to figure it out. We're going to make a deal. We're going to make a deal. Even though sometimes you hear before Joe Brandon was a little more confident in his like lack of interest in negotiating, basically saying, why would I negotiate? This is something, this is like the basic function of government. We're not going to use this as leverage to start gutting social programs. Well, it looks like we may be there. And this is all very fucking confusing because you're like, are y'all going to make a deal or not? But you're saying you won't, you say you will, and it's going to be a crisis. It's like they're both in on a scheme to make the population sweat over this crisis that may not be one. But the reality is here is it looks like the president is going to negotiate with the GOP. And that is bad, since the GOP's main requests here are making huge cuts to things like, you know, like Medicare and food stamps, which it seems like Joe Biden is a little more open to, like having more strict work requirements for food stamps, which is terrible and fucked up. While also the other part of the GOP's requests are they want to completely fuck the environment over, too. They want to cut the tax incentives for clean energy that came from the Inflation Reduction Act and replace it with basically fossil fuel hand jobs for all. So it's like a terrible backward step. And you're like, these are the things you're going to like, what the fuck is this? Like, this isn't even a negotiation, but we see this script all the time. It like replays over and over throughout every administration. Like Republicans are like, we want to go back to the 1800s. And the Democrats are like, there's no way. We do not negotiate with this kind of shit. This is beyond the pale. Then the GOP says, then we will default. We don't give a fuck. Watch us. Watch us not give a fuck. We'll completely fuck this whole thing up. Then the Democrats come to the table and cut spending, and there's more austerity measures that are just regressive. Then both parties walk out like they saved the fucking day, and life moves on. But it's a bit of a, we'll see where they end up, because while there are negotiators now speaking with McCarthy's deputy, they're like on both parties, whether it's like the House Freedom Caucus, who's like, they better gut fucking everything or we're not voting for this. And McCarthy's like, well, fuck, I don't know if we can get all that. In the meantime, there are many Democrats who are like, do not fuck with these social programs. Like, working people need these fucking programs. And to do this in service of like handouts to the fossil fuel industry is a bridge too far. And, you know, like they're like, I'm not going to support that. So I don't care what you negotiate, President Biden. It's not happening. So a bit of a topsy-turvy moment, but
it's just so frustrating because this was not a thing. Then it became a thing. Like, this debt ceiling thing was just always like a bipartisan, just like, yeah, we just got to keep it going because we just gotta, yeah, that's not even something to worry about. And then in 2011 it just became like, oh, we can just kind of hold this as some sort of hostage sort of situation where we can, you know, just demand that someone work with us unless this thing that we all have always agreed upon, like, right, we, you know, we keep it from happening, from passing. And it's just like, it's just so annoying because we all know, like, it's just like, you just, this doesn't need to be a thing. Just keep it going. You're, and yeah, the fact that they're arguing like, we need to negotiate, we need to do all this stuff. It's like, no, we know that you could just keep this separate and then just keep working on all of your other stuff.
Yeah. I mean, again, they're the party of just bad faith everything. So, you know, they're basically, you know, you're dealing with just absolute ghouls who are like, we don't give a fuck. Like, we've invited these people to the party.
There's also something to be said too, like once you're in like a certain class, like your job has a certain level of prestige and a certain salary to it. There's this level of self-importance that comes with it. And especially when it comes to politicians, they know they're not going to be affected by anything that goes sideways. Like, and so it's doubly fucked up for them to like dangle this little thing. Like, you know how dangerous this can be for y'all, right? I mean, I'm doing my best here, but I don't know, man. That really raises the anxiety amongst like people, everyday people, every single day. And it's like, they cannot, it doesn't matter to them. It will never matter to them. And that's what's, I think, where a lot of the apathy comes from, is because you see another human being so dismissive of like most of the country. Yeah. And your heart kind of just wants to believe that people couldn't do that. And they do it every time. Like you said, this has become a pattern when it didn't used to be. And it seems like there's no break system on this. Like, it's only going to get more manipulative and more insidious. And I'm wondering where we go from here, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there is, you know, like, there are things that the president could do that are kind of, you know, revolutionary, like, or not revolutionary, but like, you know, different, like, you know, evoking the 14th Amendment to sort of be like, no, I am going to make sure like all of this shit's paid. There's been talk of like printing more money, which I'm like, well, let's
minting, you know, the coin.
We don't need to do that.
Yeah. It's always, whenever they start getting into making more money in coins, I'm always like, I feel like that's not going to be what.
Yeah, but no. Come on. Wouldn't you want to hold the $1 trillion coin?
Right.
It would be pretty cool.
Yeah,
it would be
we want a trillion coin.
But also, does Biden seem like the kind of person who's going to do something different? Like,
no. No.
Like, so what, like, with anything ever?
He's presided over this exact scenario many times himself already. You know, and been on the side of it as a senator, as a vice president, and now as president. There's not, they know, because again, like at the end of the day, they're like, yeah, man, I mean, like, I was just increasing food stamps as like a campaign platform thing. Yeah, we can dial that shit back. But like here, but when we do that, like, nobody's going to know, because sadly, to your point, Justin, the people who depend on it, sometimes like the apathy rings through to the point that they are like, you're not even aware of the shit that's going on, because it's like, who gives a fuck, man? All they need to do is fuck us over anyway. Why do I need to be engaged with this shit?
Mm-hmm.
So it's, you know, makes me even more cynical when I look at it, because the doublespeak is just like absurd. Yeah. Like, it's happening or it's not. You're negotiating or you're not. But you guys are just saying this out loud while like winking to each other. Like, yeah, no, we'll make it work. We'll make it work. It just helps. It just helps both of our collective audiences seem like, you know, we're doing the fight. Rolling our sleeves up and shit.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to some people who aren't able to roll up their sleeves because they're on strike. The writers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the WGA is on strike. You know, obviously, fuck these, man, fuck these streamers especially, man, like, who want to fuck around. I mean, obviously, look, y'all shows on streaming network. I'm not going to cast aspersions on your employer. But you know what? You know what to do with these royalties, man. Stop acting brand new about this shit, because people are watching it. And again, this is a very, very interesting moment, I think, especially as it relates to AI and things like that. While I see, like, I've been seeing, like, counter opinion pieces written about, like, the writers are being completely overblown with their fear of AI. And it's like, really now? I don't think so. I think it's very much a thing. And potentially, like, one of the first groups of workers who are like, we should be able to decide when you deploy this technology that could completely fuck up our industry and our ability to support ourselves, because you just loaded a prompt into ChatGPT and now you got a whole franchise about talking mason jars or some shit.
Yeah, I mean, that was so Zach and I are both WGA. We're both on strike right now.
Yeah.
We're both like stoked to be doing this, to finally be standing up to these things. But the AI thing, like, literally that was put in. If you track kind of it's because like AI was kind of in the news when the negotiation started and enough people were kind of talking about it. And so I think they threw it in, not quite as a lark, but as just to like, hey, okay, we'll address the AI thing. We'll put it in our pattern of demands that like no AI, but this is like an easy gimme for the producers to just be like, of course, yeah, guys. I think what freaked everyone out was that they did not immediately be like, of course.
They're like,
they instead were like, whoa, 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 we don't know about this.
Let's revisit it. Let's put a pin in and just see how bad AI fucks things up. And then
they offered a yearly meeting. It was like, so I think that then got everybody like, whoa, 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 whoa.
Yeah.
Well, then hold on a sec.
Yeah.
People had also started to see in their contracts little things like that the AI that they're whatever Uber corporation above them is working on, like has like can review their material. So it's almost like it's also quick permission that our AI can read your script or whatever and kind of learn your voice a little bit just for, you know, its own intensive learning purposes, not for anything, you know, not for anything negative towards you or anything like that. And it's like, wait a second, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like now AI is studying our different, our creative process, our voices and like the things that we're making and learning that. Like it's, I mean, the thing is AI is going to affect every single job that there is in a way. Like there's like, this is going to be like the internet and how it changes things.
Absolutely.
And we can't even comprehend how it's going to affect all of our jobs, all of the things that we interact with in technology. And so I think it's incredibly important for creative people, like creative places, to also try to get ahead of it in whatever way they can so that it doesn't screw us down the line and it's too late to have any sort of like chat about it, even though we don't really know exactly what it means right now.
Right. And it's wild. Exactly. Like you not being able to control your own voice and artistic integrity is something that is like, you know, that's a spirit killer. Like there is someone I really admire and appreciate who works for a company that on the low, that guy's company took a lot of his voice and a lot of his mannerisms and like ran it through AI software and tried to see if they could like replace him in something without his knowledge.
Right.
And he was like, and then he was able to make a video about it under the company's like moniker. Like he was like still releasing videos, but he's like, hey, my company tried to do this. I'm just saying, you know, and this was, you know, a YouTube internet thing. So there's no WGA or anything involved in this, but it's affecting everyone down the line. It's only a matter of time. If you're especially in a creative industry, it's scary.
It's just like a level of respect for people that you work with. Like I think that's the other thing that it's like we already get like a lot of disrespect from like produce, you know, from like from these companies or whatever, like not respecting what we do, not really knowing what we do, but being like, you know, thinking they can just kind of push us around, thinking they can kind of dictate and know better than us how many people should be in a room.
Why can't three people write an entire season of a show in 2 weeks?
Right. No, exactly.
And then we'll green light it, okay? Yeah. We just got to see the whole show first. You got to understand. And then we'll give it a green light. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just not. So it's a level of respect, and then so the AI thing. It's in a way, it's like to even ask is like disrespectful. Like let alone to like do those kind, you know, to really try to replicate one of your colleagues, someone that you're working with, somebody who's the whole point. We make the things that these companies put out. Like we are the product. We make the products for them. And so like it's our companies too in those, you know, it's our products in those ways.
Creative labor that enables them to have these obscene payouts and all this other crap so they can go yacht it up wherever the fuck they are right now.
Yeah. And the guy I mentioned didn't even seem to be shit talking his company. Like I said, the company let him release the video like on their channel. And it seemed like it was more of like a, oh, we did this, my bad. Like we didn't know you would care. And that's also very scary. Like, why wouldn't you consider me in this? Like, why wouldn't you think I would care? You know, it's wild.
Well, we're beginning to see what happens when the workers go on strike because their labor is being exploited over and over again by a group of fucking creeps that, you know, they're like, look, you know, we know our pattern is to cut costs at any measure. And, you know, AI seems like a great way to do that. Anyway, we're looking at some of the upfronts. Some of the slates that some of the networks, you know, they like to present to advertisers. Here are the things that you could advertise on coming up this fall, like get you excited to get your ad dollars, which, again, that's, you know, the bread and butter of the ad-based broadcast television industry. So we're seeing things like what they're doing now that there are no writers contributing to make new material. Fox, they didn't release their full schedule, but they announced their slate, which features mostly unscripted shows, because that's the way around this, is to just go, just to lean into reality shows. The reason we have Cops, the TV show, is because of the writer's strike in the 80s, that they're like, oh, fuck it then. We'll just follow cops around with cameras, and that's a show. We don't need writers. So they're like, they got their show, their renewed Farmer Wants a Wife, Special Forces, and a new game show called Snake Oil, hosted by David Spade, which I'm like, is he just going to improv up there? Like, is someone writing, like who's writing this game show? But again, they'll figure out ways to like maybe put them on like a creative producer who's like,
yeah, creative consultants.
Yeah, that's what, yeah, that's how it works.
Yeah, exactly. They just scab it up that way because someone is going to have to write it. And ABC also, man, they said we got a jaw dropper of a schedule. They unveiled it. It's comprised entirely of unscripted shows, with the exception of a pair of Abbott Elementary reruns on Wednesday. That's it. They're like, fuck, man, at least we got that show. But I guess we'll just do reruns and put like not listen to the people that make the fucking hit show that are giving you all this whatever. And it sounds like, this is from TV Line, says, and what can only be viewed as a foreboding sign about the potential duration of the current writer's strike, the network's fall schedule is compromised entirely of unscripted fare. And the lineup includes more America's Funniest Home Videos, American Idol, Shark Tank, and the show 9-1-1, which Fox dropped, and several Bachelor shows, including the brand new Golden Bachelor, which isn't about people that are like piss freaks. It's about the senior citizen season of The Bachelor, which we know about. We were talking about that briefly.
I'm excited for that one. I think that one actually.
Of all of them,
I mean, you know, older people are more real. So honestly, I could just see it just being way more like, yeah, let's go for it. Like,
People who are in touch with their mortality make way better contestants on game shows.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And unlike In the Mood for Love, they will fuck in the end.
Yeah, they had her fun.
They're probably going to look for every opportunity on the Golden Bachelor to go off and fuck.
When they go to fantasy suites, one of them may come out in a wheelchair. Just because of like
instead of at the bottom, like what their occupation is, it's like how many years they probably have left to live.
Yeah, exactly. It's like Walt. Right. 20 years at best. It's just 20 years at best.
So the stakes are higher than them.
Well, it's like the thing you see, like, even on like Love is Blind on Netflix, like, a lot of the couples like crash and burn because you have like clout chasing young people who like also don't feel like the creeping of time to be like, am I going to die alone? No, surely not. So give me the Golden Bachelor, please. But again, this is sort of like where they're at. They're just going to lean into more of the unscripted shit as a way to try and be like, well, we don't need you. Guess what, assholes, you do.
This is what kills me, though. I mean, so like, and I feel like you guys probably were, you know, like Zach and I, like, we like worked with Funny or Die. We worked at The Onion. We worked in like website internet land. And we know how this plays out.
Yeah.
Which is that ultimately, like, the social media tech companies have figured out a non-union way of making what they call content, right? You know, TikTok, YouTube, like these things, which, and there are podcasts. Good things on these platforms. And there's good things, but we're all trying to survive in basically the remnants of like the apocalypse that happened to institution website-based internet. We're all scrambling and scratching trying to survive because that was destroyed by this like race to the bottom, that algorithmically based like video production, whatever these companies, Facebook, YouTube, whatever, you know, that they did. And the truth is, those are the enemies of both the AMPTP, the producers and studios, and the Writers Guild. Like, if we're fighting among ourselves right now, but what's happening is, when there's not good quality television, not good quality scripted work on TV, people are switching over to their phones. They're going to just start getting addicted to the algorithms that are, you know, made by our like adversarial countries. They're going to switch over to those things because they're literally crack, and they're not going to come back. And then we're going to just like slowly lose everything.
You're absolutely right.
It's crazy.
That was my first thought. I mean, this lineup sounds like they've given up on trying to appeal to anyone under the age of 40. So they, like, where are those people going to go? They're not, you know, it's, and I think they feel like they've already lost the like culture war in terms of like, you know, prestige TV and stuff. Like, that age is a little bit over. Everyone's watching so many different things. You know, you might have someone who, like, even like a show like Succession that seems to be ubiquitous. Like, I haven't seen a single episode, and we've talked about this show so much that I know so much about it, but it's like, you know, I can't figure out how you do that for reality television for people who aren't already like wholly in that universe, like you know. That's not really in my bubble, so I don't, they're not appealing to me, and they're not trying. And it's like, how are you, and that also leaves jobs on the table for people who maybe could write some scripted television that I would love to see, and it's just not being produced.
Well, again, I mean, like everything has just been about, how do we squeeze the most out of work? It's like it's a perfect example of happening everywhere, which is, how can we get the most out of the labor of these workers for as little money as possible and keep them in a desperate situation so all they can do is accept the raw deal that we're giving them? And really, the only way is through collective action. So shout out to the union for fucking striking, because it's doing something.
It's true. And I do want to say, I mean, like, so this, our show, High Science, yeah, we were really proud to unionize the show. It was actually the first Discovery Channel show that's ever been WGA, according to what they told us. Yeah, because they had just bought HBO when it happened.
Right.
And normally Discovery is all unscripted, yeah, all like that kind of stuff. But we were like, we're WGA writers. Like, this is going to be a scripted show. Discovery had just bought HBO Max and all those things. And we kind of made the case, like, you're going to have to start doing union stuff. We went back and forth a few times. We were on that point of, like, will we walk away from this show that we've been trying to make for years?
Right.
Like, if it doesn't go union. And then they let us do it WGA, which was amazing.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, like, the people at these networks, like, the people that we worked with who fought for our show over there, our execs, like, a lot of people fought for our show on that side, too. And, like, it's great to collaborate with those people. And I know a lot of those people also just want the best deal for all of us,
right,
because they want to keep making TV, too.
Yeah.
They love television. It's also their job to make television and try to make the best shit for everybody.
Yeah.
They want this to happen too. And the sooner we all just come together and make this something that we can all do, like, and live at,
right,
the sooner we can start making dope shit that gets people away from the fucking crack, like, of the fucking algorithm screens and watching cool shit again.
Yeah, mm-hmm, exactly. And I mean, like, and part of this too is, like, as the strike's going on, you know, Jimmy Fallon, who's just, like, had gaffe after gaffe since the strike began, whether, like, being asked, like, hey, are you paying your rent? He's like, I don't know. Oh yeah, okay, I'll do it, like, for another couple of weeks. Or, like, just another 2 weeks. He's reportedly going to be the first late night show to stop paying its crew as the writer's strike continues. According to one of the employees, NBC isn't calling it a layoff or a furlough, but rather an unpaid leave of absence. Hopefully that doesn't sting, but basically it's the same thing because you're not getting your check. The last check you're getting is coming next week, and deal with it. Colbert, Kimmel, Myers, they're all reportedly continuing to keep their staff paid. We'll see how long that lasts, but the same day this report dropped about Fallon and, like, not paying the staff, he joins Blue Sky, the new, you know, Twitter clone. And, you know, he's like, maybe people thought, like, oh, maybe he'll address the concerns of this store. Nope. Wait, he just posted about how he got the new Zelda game on Switch. Like, the most empty post of him, like, holding the Switch up, like, yeah, I got that Zelda. Naturally, most of the responses were like, he was just getting brigaded in the comments of, like, pay your fucking staff, you fucking clown, rather than stunting, like, with your dead eyes being like, I got a new Zelda. That's what I'm doing. Yeah,
I feel like Jimmy Fallon is the kind of guy who just ends up in spaces and goes along with whatever's happening in the room at the moment, because he's just kind of like the aloof, like, all shucks, silly white guy. And he's supposed to be, you know, he's like used to people treating him like he's a golden retriever. So he's extra confused when people don't like something he did or didn't do. Like the incident where he tussles Trump's hair and he's like, what would I do? Like, I'm so, what happened?
Or the terrible bored ape. Yeah, the board. With Paris Hilton. You're like, you Jesus. Fucking. Like,
this happens time and time again. I really just think he's like, everyone really likes me, right? And then people will be like, well, no, not this thing. And he's like, what? Why? No. And I can't help you, bro.
Yeah,
you gotta do some education.
You breaking character and laughing on SNL only got you a few years of endearment, man.
Yeah,
like it ends. It ends after a while. But yeah, like after that, many people, like one person posted, "Wow, cool, dude. Maybe you can build something that pays your staff since you seem unwilling to." And yeah, pretty much all the comments are like, pay your fucking writers. And then someone on Twitter at Undefeated Matt tweeted to say, if you have Blue Sky account, we're bullying Jimmy Fallon over there.
Yeah.
So hot.
Okay. So I was a writer of The Tonight Show for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what's going on there now, but I do know that when the pandemic happened, I wasn't there when the pandemic happened, but that Jimmy out of his pocket paid everybody for a couple months at least. So
a
I
lot
know
of hosts did that.
He has done that stuff before. I don't know what's going on now, but like he has reached into his pockets before and paid people for a while without when shit's going down.
I can only
hope that he continues or whatever, but
yeah. And look, I you know, shout out to your good ex-employee for sticking up for him. I think the issue though, I think just perceptually, right, in our in our current time, and I know what you mean, because
I don't know, man,
like, but Corden did it, many other people did it, as they should, because they're millionaires and they get paid millions of dollars. And you again, they're not where they are. The hosts of these shows are not where they are without their staffs, especially their writing staff, their monologue teams, etc.
I mean, no, and I know tons of people on the staff, and like there are people, there's like you know, costume designers and set makers who are worried about paying their mortgage,
yeah.
You know, and it's like it's very real, very immediately for hundreds of people who aren't writers. Like that's like one of the crazy things that we have to do when we go on strike is we are doing it knowing that we are affecting the jobs of assistants who are being let go.
Yeah.
You know, so many people, crews everywhere, so many people are being affected by this who didn't have a say, who didn't have a vote. And like that weighs heavily on all of our minds. And mm-hmm. So it's like, that's why we just want this shit to like get fixed as soon as possible, because right. We want not just us to go back to work. We want everyone to go back to work. And right. Yeah, I don't know.
But I think that's why there's so much solidarity with the WGA, because like other, you know, like the Teamsters or IATSE, which is another for people who aren't aware of like show business, like another major union in the film industry. Like they're like, yeah, man, because if you guys get it right, like that only increases our chances to better our situation as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Yeah. And SAG-AFTRA, they're talking about going on strike now. I mean, it's always been where the Writers Guild, they started, and then other groups that just may not be as collectively unified will like right. then be like, okay, we can get behind this too. Yeah. Like,
yeah,
this works for us start too. With the Writers Guild though.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cause they're like, wait, I should get residuals too as a fucking performer.
What I also got to say, this is the first, like, since I've joined the Writers Guild, I've been a member for like 5-6 years now. This is the first big strike I've been a part of. And you guys, like, when you're in the Writers Guild and they're going on strikes, the speeches are so good getting you pumped to go on strike. I mean, they're just like, we have been down here as rats in the ground, and now it's time to come together. Right. And you're just like, oh my God, yes, let's strike. It's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, Adam Conover like had a very fantastic sort of soundbite at the beginning of it, which I think captured the imagination of many people. Were like, yeah, man, like, fuck yeah. Like, try and do something, and you're in a situation to do it. To better the situation that we're seeing, where again, everywhere you look, labor is being exploited and all of the wealth is being concentrated at the top with no regard for the people that are actually creating.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm stoked about too. And like speaking to the solidarity of the other unions, like, but like I was out picketing yesterday and there was like nurses on the line with us. Like it feels like also just in general, this wave of like labor in America finally coming, like finally people being like, oh, wait,
that's right.
Is that why things were better for like the middle class like 30 years ago? Cause we like fought to make it better.
Right. I mean,
and like people finally coming together to like do this.
I grew up in the Valley, the San Fernando Valley as a kid. So many people who worked in the industry, like that's where they settled, right? Like it's because like you didn't have the money to like live in Beverly Hills, so like crew writers, people like that, they settled in the San Fernando Valley. And there were people who like I had friends whose parents had a very perfectly middle class life in the 80s and 90s just from like writing on one show and being able to do that, and that was affording them things like home ownership and other things, paying for college. And it wasn't like, oh man, like this thing ends and then like they're not actually like the pay is terrible and there's no benefit. Like it's so different. And I think every person can speak to their industry and be like, well, it wasn't like this 30 years ago. Like mm-hmm. you could fucking live off this shit. But, you know, these hyper capitalists have figured it out by saying, what if we just took all the money and didn't share it? Obviously, all of our support is with the WGA right now because it's absolutely imperative. And like I said, I mean, podcasting absolutely needs to, I mean, like we're seeing it like at places here, like iHeart is like in union talks, many industries are experiencing this thing where it's like, well, you're selling all these ads against our work, but where is the proper, you know, distribution of all of that? Because again, it looks like it's just shot up to the top, and then everyone's like, okay, how's the stock price? All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back just to wrap it out with some movie talk after this.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. Look over your shoulder if you're driving, please, because people might be driving like straight up assholes because a new Fast and Furious movie is out. Fast X is coming out today, this weekend. It's out there. People are, I don't know, they're probably, has anyone ever not liked a Fast and Furious? Because like, it's not like you're there for the melodrama. Will they? Won't they? You're there for the fucking just obscene, like vehicular porno. That is
Tokyo Drift has its haters, but
yeah. People hate that.
That would be the Wong Kar Wai version, right? Is like the whole movie is like, are they going to drive the car or not?
Yeah.
Drive the fucking car. Just drive the car.
The keys just almost in the ignition. They're like, I don't know.
No. Just fucking. I'm in the mood to drive the car.
What was the car in that? Was it Han's car?
Or in what one?
In Fast and Furious 2. Too Fast, Too Furious.
I remember
Tokyo Drift.
Lil Bow Wow's character had a Hulk like Scion XB. I remember that.
Yeah. I remember that was in like Devin Aoki was in everything, but
they
didn't care if she had acting skills or not. They're like, yo, that's Steve Aoki's sister.
Get in here, Nepo baby. We love you. Yeah.
Oh, for people who don't know, her and Steve Aoki's dad started Benihana.
Benihana's. Yeah. But
what?
Yeah.
That's Rocky, her? Really? Oh, yes. My God.
Rocky Aoki.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
It all comes together.
That's all
I remember Dom shows up at the end. His car is in there. I don't know what the car was in that one. I'd have to go back and watch.
Anyway, we digress because, again, this is about people's safety. That's what this show is about first and foremost. Right. And, you know, we've come a really long way, you know, from this... from a movie franchise that began merely with a simple story about stealing soon-to-be worthless DVD players. And look at where we're at. We're at the fucking 10th one. The question is, now, will Fast 10 usher in a wave of people driving like absolute maniacos? There's been a lot of suggestions that the Fast and Furious movies influence people's behavior. So when the first film came out, way back in 2001, there were reports of an, quote, increase in street racing in Los Angeles. This is a headline that, like, said, Fast and Furious fuels increase in street racing. But even that article, as you read it, they admit that the street races occurred the first weekend the movie came out, which is not really enough time to be like, yeah, we're going to organize mass street races because we're inspired by this. And the article also says, A, that street racing raids are regular in, for the LAPD. Street racing has been around since time immemorial.
The 50s or 40s or something, in LA specifically. Come on,
we saw Greece. They were racing in the fucking LA River, man. What the fuck was that? And also, secondly, the cops' operation was, quote, explicitly timed to coincide with the release of the movie. So it's like propaganda in a way. Mm-hmm. They're like, oh, sure. Yeah, we're on our shit, man, because, you know, these Fast and Furious freaks.
It's in the headlines. Let's go get it. It'll be viral.
Exactly.
Yeah, we got a movie tie-in.
This is great. Yeah, movie tie-in for our raids. Perfect.
Movie tie-in for our homeless encampment sweeps. I don't know how we're going to tie it in, but we're like, man, we had to. You saw Fast and Furious.
Is there a blockbuster movie about camping coming out soon? We could probably tie it in.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So the movie didn't, if anything, the movie inspired the raids, not the fucking racing.
Right.
When the sequel came out, some people even blamed a string of deaths around the country on Too Fast, Too Furious. The studio was like, this is very odd cause and effect that you're bringing up. They bring up the case of William LaCasse Jr. had, quote, just pulled out of a gas station in his mother's Corvette when two cars zipped by and flashed their hazard lights at the 17-year-old in a challenge to race. LaCasse floored it. Moments later, he crashed into a concrete light pole and was killed. And then they said another victim in a string of deaths around the country. They said, this is all to blame on Too Fast, Too Furious, a movie about street racers that hit theaters 3 weeks ago. But again, like you said, this has been around forever.
Yeah. And also, I think nowadays, if you are going to ask like a young person who just got their driver's license and maybe has access to a cool car or something, like where they learned how to like participate in takeovers or shutdowns or sideshows or whatever, it's probably TikTok. I'm not gonna lie. I'll spend hours and hours on Instagram and TikTok just looking at the insanity of people just like shooting fireworks at cops who will just sit there and do nothing and just let them fuck around in an intersection for 40 minutes, just like waving guns at each other and stuff. I love the chaos, but it's obviously not safe. And there's people who don't know what they're doing. So
did you see the one where they shut down the Golden Gate Bridge?
Yes, bro. And they have the drone footage from there. Yeah! That shit is amazing.
I was like, go off.
I was like,
man,
they should put this in Fast and Furious. Put this in Fast and Furious, not the other way around.
What we need to do is we need to unite the street racers and the Writers Guild of America for some real disruptive kind of demonstrations. You know what I mean?
Oh my just God, the demonstrations would be incredible.
They'll be like, yo, we fuck with you, man. And like, we're down to maybe figure out some content here.
Just hang out the side of a Charger with a fucking strike poster. Like, pay your riders! And like bumping some big...
Put it on fucking two wheels on its side and you're scraping the ground with the picket sign. Like, fuck y'all! Yeah.
Just like paper mache scripts onto cars. So just kind of, now it looks like...
I will say, being out on the picket line, it's just all about honking.
Yeah.
It's just like honking goes straight into our fucking veins.
What about that shit that burp? I'm sorry to get to fucking sidetrack, but I saw that like outside of Warner Brothers, they're like, honking is illegal. Like they're trying to make it seem like you can't honk. And then the mayor of Burbank was like, nah, man, y'all fucking honk. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Honking's illegal.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Honk at that shit.
There's this whole button in the middle of your fucking steering wheel that was made to support unions.
Yeah, exactly.
Use the button.
Lay on that shit. And also, shout out to the people in other cities where productions are happening that are also getting their shit together to shut down productions, because that's one of the things that a lot of studios are trying to do. Is like, maybe we can abscond back to Georgia, but it's like, no, they're starting to figure y'all out. And like sending out fake call sheets and stuff. It's a whole like information war happening with like, you know, shutting these sets down. But we digress. Back to the Fast and the Furious. Whether or not the movies actually led to more street racing or not, researchers, they did their best and they said they could find a loose link between the releases of Fast and the Furious and increases in speeding violations. Not necessarily, fucking racing. Basically saying like, you know, people got too hopped up on watching Dom Toretto and his Charger. So, you know, they left the theater in their fucking Camry acting like they had nitrous shit in there and trying to hit the switches. The study, which even their authors admit, it's like limited, but they analyzed traffic violations in Maryland, found a large increase in the average speed of drivers who received speeding tickets on the weekends after Fast and Furious releases. And the percentage of people nailed for extreme speeding, which is like 40 miles over the limit, nearly doubled. It's like, oh, they juxtaposed that when a Hunger Games movie came out. didn't go up. So they're like, I mean, there might be something there.
Yeah, but more people became archers when Hunger Games
A lot of bow and arrow accidents.
Like, that increased huge. Like, archery schools. True? Yeah, absolutely. Like, it was a huge trend in kids taking archery from Hunger Games. So movies totally affect what you want to do and, like, and do stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Queen's Gambit, you guys remember that? I wanted to play chess so bad when that show came out. So I totally understand watching a car movie and being like, man, I want to fucking just drive fast now.
I was already, I remember playing like on PlayStation, or maybe it was PlayStation 2. There was a game called Midnight Club that was like a street racing game. And I was totally into that shit. Then Fast and Furious came out and I was like, oh, I'm really into this game. And then Need for Speed started changing all theirs. They started switching it up. Anyway, I'm like an old video game head. And I'm like, man, remember that Need for Speed that had the Ying Yang Twins song when you load it up?
Midnight Club Dub Edition. You remember that?
Yeah, the Dub Edition. Man, I used to go to dub shows.
That's the one I didn't play the other one. Yeah.
I used to go to a lot of dub shows, especially when I worked in radio. Anyway, so again, the researchers conceded that it doesn't obviously suggest cause and effect, but that there was some kind of link there somewhere there. But, you know, like, it's probably more so that, like, if you're into driving fast, you're probably going to go see Fast and Furious because you're getting your jollies like that. But one measurable nuisance that is caused by the film are for the residents of this very quaint neighborhood just west of downtown where Dom Toretto lives. Okay. And the people live there, they've been complaining regularly about fans racing and doing donuts in the neighborhood nearly every night that they protested the filming of the film because they're like, you're fucking up our neighborhood. Zach, do you know are you familiar with anybody who lives in that part of town?
Matt and I, we have like four friends who live within blocks of that spot. And they have said that, they're like, the one thing, it's a cool neighborhood, we like it. The one thing is, you know, it's the Dom Toretto spot. So, you know, there's just always car. The main thing that people do is show up with their cool car and just stop traffic to take a photo of it. So it's just like constant traffic jams of people in line to take a photo of their car in the middle of the street.
Yeah.
And then at nighttime, race their car down the street because it feels also like Fast and the Furious. So, yes, it's a huge, I can absolutely attest that that is a problem that's happening year round for them, the people who live near there.
It's always funny, like, people who live near those, like, a home, like, that whose exterior served as, like, an iconic film or TV moment. Like, the people who absolutely, like, want to fuck up the visitors to the Walter White House in New Mexico. Like, how they're,
Throw pizzas on it, like, on the roof.
But, like, the owners of the house are, like, militant now. They're like, get the fuck away from this fucking house. They're like, we get that it was Walter White's house. And, yeah, the love of just being family, you know, over there and cracking a brew open, which is also really interesting. The film also has a huge effect on beer sales. Like, while Corona did not pay to have their product featured in the films, the franchisees, like, the people who make the movie, they're like, all in all told, we've gave them about $15 million in free advertising when you really add it up. And like one of the producers like, why don't I have that shit just delivered to me on the fucking daily? I bet that was probably like a really low energy way for them to be like, this is how we're going to get fucking Corona free for life. Cut to.
You got to drop that fact if you've got that fact.
Yeah. Like, and they're like,
you know, we've been helping out Corona for a long time. Do you guys think that white tank tops sell better when Fast and Furious movies come out? Like the Dom Toretto?
Probably. I'd imagine if you're bald, you're buying a white tank and you maybe do
some
curls.
A good reminder for bald men to go pick up a new white tank.
Do you guys think
top.
Going bald goes up when the
Fast and Furious? I mean, like, every time it comes out, I shave my head, reshave it, but get it looking good.
Bald man's confidence goes up 300% whenever there's a new Fast and Furious.
Bald man fucking.
How many bald men in white tank tops are. Well, this is the thing. How many bald men in white tank tops are getting in car accidents after Fast and Furious?
That's the stat we need. And how many of them are increasing in how much they mention family? Like, I bet it's like they're mentioning family more. They're
we haven't been asking the right questions.
Sir, do you know why? I pulled you over? Because, man, family.
What?
I knew it. Get out of the car.
Get out of the car, you fucking Toretto wannabe.
This is our 20th bald man in a white tank top that was arrested today.
Just all the mugshots the week after.
Exactly. Because, like, okay, this is interesting. We got to look at all the states that have public mugshots. And after Fast and Furious, how many tank top bald guys are we going to see? They're just like, all like, like bleary eyed. Yeah. Like,
all their mouths are in the they're saying family. You can see like I think if we like show these mugshots, they're saying the word family. Yeah.
Oh man. So yeah, I mean, shout out to all of you getting fast and or furious, but please do it safely and you know, please wear white tank tops responsibly. Zach, Matt, thank you so much for joining us on the Daily Zeitgeist. Where can people find you, follow you, and obviously catch High Science?
Hell yeah. Well, watch High Science on HBO Max or Discovery Plus or Max. Now that it's all becoming Max,
yeah,
it's gonna be we're going to be on Max. So check that out. You can find me on Instagram at ZPoitras or on Twitter at BigZachPoitras.
Oh, okay, Big Zach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess I'm on my Twitter is the one that I stare at more than the other ones, and I'm at Matt Kleinman.
But how you spelling that, Matt? How you spelling that?
Oh, right. K-L-I-N-M-A-N. No E. The E got dropped at Ellis Island.
Oh, so one of those.
My name is spelled wrong, dude.
When the Amedigans made you change your name. It's my favorite, one of my favorite Sopranos scenes where Phil Leotardo talks about how they are really Leonardo. And then, anyway, great scene for all my Sopranos fans.
Yeah.
And what's a tweet or a work of media or social media that you guys are loving?
Oh, yo, so it came out this week, the Hard Drive, right? You guys know the website Hard Drive. And I don't know if you guys have already talked about this on the show. They had like a complete reviewing of every N64 game this week.
Whoa.
They dropped this massive article where they went back and played every single game that was released for the Nintendo 64 and reviewed them.
That's amazing.
And it's like 200 and some odd games. Wow. And it's like a complete, I've just been like, have a tab open of it and just page through. And I think maybe because I obviously had an N64 and was renting a lot from Blockbuster, but also I had like a GamePro subscription during that time. I'm like shocked at the number of like games that I recognize and either played or like knew about.
Right.
And to like finally really hear about them. And then also from now, it's a really spectacular piece of work. Very comprehensive. Can't recommend it enough.
Love that. Yeah. I mean, I guess universally they're panning the Superman game because isn't that sort of universally?
Yeah, although it's not they didn't consider it the absolute worst.
Oh.
There were a few that were worse, but that is at the very bottom.
What's the worst?
You gotta look at the thing here. I'll pull it up.
Oh, you're not saying that as a tease. You just don't know. You don't remember.
So no, I don't remember. I think it was another superhero game though.
That makes sense.
Okay. Zach, what about you?
You know, Matt and I, we're both watching the show Silo right now on Apple, and I realized that you can really easily hook me into any show where you go like, all of humanity is living in a cave. Like, will that work out? I'm in, you know? If you say like, all of humanity is living in the trees.
Right.
Why? What will that mean? I'm like,
I gotta know how that changes.
I will check that out, dude. I will absolutely check that out. So you put any people in some sort of just like one place or setting,
right.
And ask the question why, I'm in.
Yeah, there we go. There we go. Did you find out what the worst game was, Matt?
Yeah. It's another, it's Batman Beyond Return of the Joker.
Oh, shit. We were just talking about how the Joker would be a great podcaster.
Yeah.
But Heath Ledger Joker specifically.
So that one, and then Carmageddon 64, they ranked worse than Superman, which makes me feel better because I always felt bad about not playing Carmageddon.
Right.
Because it was one of the most played like demos that I played on my computer. You know those really? Games where you just had one level
and
you just had the demo and you like kept playing it because you would never, because I could never go to my parents and say, can you buy me Carmageddon?
Yeah. Oh, man. Shout out to Carmageddon. Shout out to those long lost games. Justin. Thank you so much for joining me, man. Where can people find you and all that? And is there a work of social media or media that you're digging?
Yeah. You can find me on Instagram at jconthesmith. That's at jconthesmith. Lately, Hulu has been killing it with the 90s hip hop documentaries of late, by which I mean I've seen two. The Jay Dilla one is fantastic,
of course.
But the Tupac one was the one that really was a huge surprise for me because it's called Dear Mama. I was avoiding it for weeks because I was like, another Tupac documentary. I don't really, you know, what else can I learn? I've seen so many of these. It's fantastic. I sat there for like 6 hours and just absorbed all this stuff because it really isn't about just about him. It's equally his mom holds a weight in there. And it was released a little bit before Mother's Day. And it's incredibly touching and heartwarming. If you know anything about Tupac, the gangster side of him came out a little bit later in life, but he was a sensitive young boy at a certain point. And you really see him for who he is in this documentary. I think that's the first time. Like, I really didn't want to hear about like, oh, who really killed him or what's the, I wanted to hear more about like the person. And this really does that. So if you're interested in that, you can check that out. Dear Mama on Hulu. And also I was lucky enough to get my sleeve started for my tattoo by an outstanding artist and professor at USC by the name of Danny Cancino.
And professor.
She's a local LA artist who's been blowing the fuck up lately. In fact, if you're in the area, she has a solo exhibition on display at the Charlie James Gallery titled This Is My Blood. It's a love letter to her city, her heritage, her culture. It's got Mexican spirituality all up in it. If that interests you, you should go check it out. And you can follow her on Instagram at Danny Cancino. That's DanieCancino.
Somebody getting that sleeve done for fucking free after that. I'm like that.
We like vibed that. She's
shout
really
out
cool
Danny.
Person.
Yeah.
Shout out Danny.
Hey, shout out Danny. I fuck with Danny too, man. I want to get a free tattoo though. Let's see. You can find me at Miles of Gray on most @-based platforms. You can find our basketball podcast, Jack O'Brien and I's basketball podcast. Miles and Jack got mad boosties. We've been talking about the postseason. Oh my God, that Celtics Heat game.
Jimmy Butler, man.
Oh, man. Jimmy Buckets doing his thing. And, man, Jason Tatum absolutely turned to a ghost in that fourth quarter. Don't know what happened. The Invisible Man. But, look, I, as of this recording, don't know what happened in Game 2 of the Lakers-Nuggets series. So I could be a sad boy as well. So who knows? You can also find me on my, reality show podcast with Sophia Alexandra, where we talk about 90 Day Fiancé called 420 Day Fiancé. You know what the fuck is up. And let's see, some tweets I like. At WBEZ tweeted, hundreds of workers showed support for WGA TV and film writers in their third week of strike against the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers. And then at Daisy Gardner sort of quote tweeted and said, you got to feel pretty dumb if you could have given the writers what they wanted for the cost of a few private jet rides for your executives, but you refused and accidentally kicked off a nationwide labor solidarity movement. Hashtag WGA strong. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And at Julie_Bush quote tweeted that Daisy Gardner tweet and said, I'll never forget when an exec told me privately that the amount I was getting paid was literally the amount the execs were blowing on private jets to locations for no particular reason. It just shows you like that the money's there. It's just not being properly distributed. And it's for fucking indulgences. And at Samo Yedcore tweeted, hey, nice man bun. Haha, it fucking sucks, you hipster asshole. He turns around and reveals he is a samurai from the Tokugawa shogunate. Oh, fuck. So specific, but I love that samurai reference. You can follow us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter, at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. Got a Facebook fan page, website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post all episodes and our footnotes.
Footnotes.
Thank you, Justin. Where we post all of the links to the articles we talk about and also the song we write out on. What are we going out on? This is a track from the artist Slim Shug, which the letters are being switched around from Slim Thug. Okay, I recognize that. But this is Slim Shug. And this person's like a Brooklyn-based like producer. This track that they put out like that we're going out on is called DK001. It sounds like sort of a Fly Low adjacent house track, like a really interesting production with like really great percussive textures on it and like haunting sort of vocal sample that might be Slim Shug themselves, but I'm not sure. So check this one out, DK001, all one word, to, you know, take that into the weekend. Again, this show is a production of iHeartRadio, so for more podcasts, check out the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back later to tell you what's trending. Until then, peace the fuck out. Bye.
Bye.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast, Climbing in Heels, is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.